She was pregnant with her first child 6 years ago. She's passionate about Jesus and moms and about connecting the two. Before staying home to care for her babies, Sarah worked for the government and received her bachelor's degree in marketing while 6 months pregnant. And she looks forward to one day being able to actually put that into use. She's been married to her husband, Jason, for 10 years, and they have two children, Audrey, who is 5, and Cameron, who is 3. And Kim is a stay-at-home mom to Wesley, who is 4, and Daniel, who is 1. And she's in her 13th year of marriage to her husband, Mike. Adventure and experience are attitudes that Kim embraces in her home. Before having children, she was a full-time early elementary teacher, and she loves to bring the excitement of the classroom to her children. Camping and cooking and celebrating with friends are her favorite pastimes, so that's perfect for our theme. Kim has been actively involved with MOPS for almost 5 years and loves connecting with other moms and building friendships and encouraging other people. So please welcome Sarah and Kim.
Okay, so normally when you sign up to be a coordinator, you don't have to speak, so bear with us. Like Laura said, this is kind of a new thing that we've done this year, but if you've been in MOPS for a while, you know how awesome that MOPS International is with coming up with the themes for us every year and giving us information and setting us up for success. And this year, we kept a lot of what they came up with for We Are the Starry-Eyed, but we kind of changed it to fit Emmanuel Bible Church's kind of view on what we think this community of moms should be based on. And so since we did that, if any of you registered through MOPS International for the year, you would have gotten their welcome packet and see all the information they sent you. And so Kim and I just wanted to come up. We were sort of peer pressured to come up and talk to you guys about the theme so that you know a little better. We were voluntold. So that you guys know a little better what course we'll be taking for the year and you're not like totally confused when you come up to hear us talk for the year. So we're glad you guys are here. We're going to talk to you about the theme. And like I said, I've no experience doing this, so if I look down too much, I'm really sorry. I'm going to try to make a lot of eye contact, but here we go. So We Are the Starry-Eyed, we feel, is based on the idea that God inspires wonder and awe in us and as we embrace the task of becoming mothers. We think it's a wonderful job to be a mom, and I know that Kim and I are grateful and thankful and inspired and humbled every morning when we get to wake up and see our sweet little babies' faces. We know that each child that's represented in this room is loved for and cared for because and prayed for because we pray for them and along with all the leadership here. And we know that you guys love them so much. When God designed motherhood, I wonder what he thought about how we would treat our children as a society in this day and age. Because in one instance, our children seem more coddled and spoiled and entitled than ever. But when you step outside of the world of parenting, it can seem that children are still very much looked at as a nuisance. It's difficult when you're a proud and strong parent, but you walk into a movie theater or a restaurant or an airplane cabin or a lounge pool, and people who are already there turn with a sharp stare to let you know that your children are not welcome. How did these tiny people get such a bad rap at such a young age? We wonder. Because as much as Mrs. Clinton would like to think that it takes a village, I'm afraid that the village is becoming more and more put off by the idea that other people's children still need their help. This has really led to the notion that we as moms have to do it all, and the reality is that we just can't. The hard part about this reality is the idea that it all falls on our plates has led us to feel burnt out, stressed, overworked, and sometimes very, very alone. I mentioned earlier a lounge pool, and that's actually a very personal story for me and my neighbor who's here, because I was taking my kids to the neighborhood pool, and we were going to meet our neighbor there, and she had actually reminded me that the adult pool in our neighborhood had been changed to a lounge pool, and that they were allowing children into the pool now. So we thought that it would be a good idea to try it out. It had to be better for our between 5 and 2 year olds than the big pool where all the teenagers were throwing footballs and splashing cannonballs in our faces. Because honestly, teenagers kind of scare me. It's been a long time since I was one, and it seems really far away for our kids still. So we went ahead and we walked towards our neighbors who were greeting us with smiles. But I could feel the eyes of all the non-kid people burning holes right through me as soon as we walked in. It was very obvious we weren't welcome there. And if the point wasn't going to be made through their glares, then the next move was going to be for them to vocalize it. And that's what they did. "This is the quiet pool," one guy said to us while my children were just splashing quietly right a few feet away from him. "Your kids are going to get hurt if you let them do that," a young woman who obviously didn't have kids thought that I should know. And I felt super uncomfortable, but luckily my kids were none the wiser, minus my attempts to get them to just be quiet and float in one little spot and not make any sounds. You might ask why our HOA changed the rules in the first place, and it was later noted in a newsletter that they were actually forced to by the Fair Housing Act, which is actually a law that was created to fight discrimination on a number of things, and one of those was family status, meaning that children are people too. We ended up getting kicked out of the lounge pool after numerous complaints, and we never went back. I wonder why the sight of children brings forth so much condemnation from the kidless people in our society. I also recently read a Washington Post article about how a new law was passed that would force airlines to sit family with small children near each other. That just seems crazy to me. And not pay you for it, charge you for it, was the law. That actually hit home for me, too, because all of our family is on the West Coast, and we fly a lot. And it's always been difficult or cost a lot of money just to sit my family of four together. You know, if we haven't figured it out before we get on the plane, we play that nervous game where, if any of you have flown and know, you get on and you kind of wait to watch who's going to sit next to you so you can ask them to take your random seat wherever else on the plane you were placed. So that you could sit together, or at least just not have your three-year-old in the middle of two complete strangers. Because nobody wants that. It really boggles my mind when someone, though, and this has happened, so desperately has to sit in the aisle over letting a small child be near their parents. These ideas, together with the pressure of how every woman should work themselves to death to accommodate what the world suggests a mother should look like, have led to the creation of TV shows and movies like Moms Night Out and Bad Moms that poke fun at our cultural standards. And they give us moms, though, the right to take a breather and say, you know what? I love my kids, and I love my husband. I love my house, my job, my family, and my friends. But sometimes I just need a break. And that's where this year's theme and theme verse really come in. We want you all to feel like God has called you on an amazing adventure, and that the idea of being a mom is something to be so excited about. While I was preparing for this talk tonight, I searched for adventures in motherhood to see what would pop up on Pinterest. And while I eagerly awaited what wonderful information I'd be flooded with from one of my favorite websites, I was very disappointed by what I saw. I literally saw a pin for a pagan mom's website. And my husband, when he was proofreading this for me, said, "Should you change that to worldly moms?" I said, "No, it was pagan moms website." There's a group for them. So that just was crazy to me. And that was one of the first things to pop up on Pinterest. There were also pictures, though, of moms having a wonderful time somewhere exciting and new with their kids. But between those pictures was this one that says, if you can see it, "I'd rather have a passport full of stamps than a house full of stuff." But someone crossed stuff out and wrote "kids" underneath it. I thought that was crazy. We don't think that as women we should have to choose one or the other. We think that God is calling us to have both, and that being a mom is the greatest adventure we're ever going to be called on.
Take water. Yes. So I'm going to put it up a little. Sorry, guys. All right. Yes. So I'm going to talk about how we think this year's theme and verse give us the audacity to say to the world, we love being moms and we're excited to face this calling head on. The theme verse for the year is Jeremiah 33:3. Call to me and I will answer you and tell you great and unsearchable things you do not know. How awesome is it to know that our God is just a cry for help away? He's waiting just to show us how awesome it is to be moms, and all we have to do is be willing to ask him to show us. Because let's face it, motherhood is a mysterious, nerve-wracking, scary, and full of questions. How many questions do you think you asked, and to how many different people in the first month of your child being born? I admit it probably gets easier, or it gets easier on the second, maybe the third, fourth kids come along, but there are still many questions even then. And this verse is so significant to relating the role God has given us as mothers to the reality that settles in after we find out that we're receiving the gift of life. Think back to that moment you realized you were going to be a mom for the very first time. It happens in different ways for each of us, but no matter how the news was broken, the emotions that came with that revelation are enormous. And then so are some of our bellies. A wise red panda once said, "If you only do what you can do, you will never be more than you are now." That panda was Master Shifu, and his words ring true. The difference is that the Kung Fu Panda's calling was optional, and God's calling for us is not so much. Being a mom is tough work, and becoming a mom is a job in its own. And those emotions, they don't stop. We cry, we stress, we wonder, we worry. And now instead of feeling these things for ourselves, we're feeling them for the sweet gifts that God has given us. And we turn to him for help. "Call to me," he says, "and I will answer." What better counselor, friend, confidant do we have than our God? And we're blessed because when he made each of us, he looked down at his beautiful creation and he said to himself, "She's going to make a wonderful mother." What a calling we've been given, and what a responsibility. Not something I think God took lightly when creating us or our children. He knew specifically who we would grow up to be and which children he would place in our care. Forget what the world thinks of how we're doing as mothers, because God knows. And he's the one we are called, or that we are to call on when we aren't sure of ourselves. It's been said of this theme, the theme this year, that being starry-eyed may bring the connotation that as moms we may be sort of loopy or gaga-eyed. Webster says starry-eyed is having hopes and desires that are not realistic or practical. But as long as our wonder and awe or hopes and desires are focused towards our Creator, I say, who better to be starry-eyed for? God created the stars. He knows just where he placed each one, perfectly as it should be. When wanderers are lost and can't seem to find their way, the North Star is their guide home. When the Star of David shone above the city of Bethlehem, the wise men were able to find the newborn king. When we're lost, wondering what to do, what we do next, why we were chosen to go on this adventure, because life is feeling difficult and we just don't know if we have enough of ourselves left to give out, we can look up at those same stars. Imagine being outside on a beautiful, silent, sleepy night when all the world is still. You've been hiking all day, been turned around and sent in the wrong direction, had to scavenge for food and figure out how much is needed and at what time. Your feet are aching and your mind is fraught with worry. You step away from the camp you've set up with the fire crackling behind you. You close your eyes and point your head toward the heavens. Take in a deep breath and understand that, yes, you're surrounded by the darkness of night. But when you open your eyes, it's the light of the stars that you see that you first see. When we call to God in our real life adventures, he's going to show us the light that he wants to shine down on us. And as he shows us the answers to the unsearchable things that we've been questioning, I believe we'll see how gracious, merciful, and kind he is to us as mothers. Because our hearts were made for this job, what better teacher to have than God?
Okay, that's right. And aren't we thankful that God has equipped us with wonderful tools for our adventure? Like we mentioned before, he chose us for this adventure, so he wouldn't send us out without just the right equipment. 1 Peter 2:9 says, "But you are not like that, for you are a chosen people. You are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of darkness into wonderful light." Now, this wasn't a group of moms that Peter was writing to, but it was in fact a group of weary, recently dispersed new believers who were gathered together to glean any bit of information they could about how to live for God while following Jesus. And Peter called them chosen. What sticks out most to me here is that he tells these travelers that they were called out of the darkness and into wonderful light. And that's what I believe, that that's how God views motherhood as well. This world is really a dark place sometimes, and we know that when it comes to darkness, that the light of God does not intertwine with it, but shines through it instead. Think of a time when you're in the midst of darkness, but you saw the light of God shining. There are times when we feel both, and it's the light that we must follow. Think of when your children were born. What a painful, exhausting, heart-wrenching time. So many things could go disastrously wrong, and we once again are overtaken with worry and fear and excruciating pain. But oh, when the baby is brought into the world and cries for the very first time, we see the light. And it shines through all of the rough experiences that we had to face to get to that moment. For me, there's another time that I remember seeing God's light in a dark time, and it's when I decided to do something fun and exciting, but it turned into a complete nightmare. This was before I had children, but it doesn't take away from the lesson that I learned and will surely pass on to my children. My husband and I, he was my fiancé at the time, we were being taken to a beautiful hike in the Pacific Northwest by one of our closest friends and soon-to-be groomsmen. It was supposed to be a fun and relaxing way to forget about the stress of our upcoming wedding because we were 2 weeks away from becoming husband and wife. We hiked 2.5 miles up a very steep trail with a cliff on one side and up to a beautiful waterfall in Portland, Oregon called Punch Bowl Falls. It was called Punch Bowl Falls because that's exactly what the water at the bottom of the 40-foot waterfall looked like. It was deep enough that we watched person after person jump from the, well, not the top of the falls, but if you look up to right here, that's where they were jumping from. So the waterfall was 40 feet, but that spot was 80 feet. So they were jumping and coming up just fine and with huge smiles on their face usually. Jason and I were 22, and we were about to take the biggest leap of our lives, so we thought, why not take this one first? It was also over 100 degrees, which never happens in that part of the country. If you've spent any time up there, you know that's blistering hot. And so we really wanted to cool down as well. We climbed to the top of the cliff and looked over, and then we backed away. And then we looked over again, and then we backed away again. And then we looked at each other with great big wide eyes, I remember, and they said to each other through those eyes without saying a word, "I don't think I actually want to do this." But we kept watching person after person continue to jump and come up just fine. Really, what could happen? We asked the jumpers what they would recommend a first-timer do to ensure that they landed safely, and all I remember one young kind of surfer-looking guy saying was to make sure that you land feet first. So we looked over the edge again. Then we backed up again, and then I remember my fiancé grabbing my hand and pulling me, and we jumped off the edge. So I remember sticking my feet straight out as to follow those recommendations to land feet first, and I remember thinking what a bad idea that was, and I remember looking around at how pretty it was, because it was 80 feet. It was a very long fall. I remember thinking I wanted to be one of those cartoons and turn around and skedaddle back onto the cliff. Anyways, I finally hit the water, and I knew that something was wrong. I thought I'd had the wind knocked out of me, but as I swam to the surface, I panicked, and I started to swim to a rock that I saw nearby. I looked over as I was swimming, and I heard another jumper ask if I was okay, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just swimming to this rock." But then I felt someone grab me from behind, and it was actually Jason, my fiancé, and he said that I was just kind of flailing in the water, not moving anywhere, and it looked like I needed help. So he put me up on this rock, and I laid flat there for about 3 hours until the paramedics could hike up the trail to come and get me. First, they argued over who was going to come and took a long time to figure that out, I guess. But once I got there, they put me on a stretcher and laid me on top of a wheelbarrow type thing. And for another 2 hours, they wheeled me down the steep trail with a cliff to the side, stuck on a stretcher so I couldn't move. And then once we got to the bottom, I waited about another hour for the ambulance, who hadn't gotten there yet. And once I got in the ambulance, it took about another hour to get to the nearest hospital. So all in all, it took 7 hours for me to make it to the emergency room once from when I hit the water until the ambulance pulled up. And what felt like a lifetime there and a billion tests afterwards, they eventually told me in the most undelicate way possible that I had broken my back. That was crazy to me. I'm getting married in 2 weeks, I thought. I looked at Jason's face as well as our groomsman, who I could see was feeling very guilty about talking us into going on this hike. And we all wondered and tried to take in the news that we just heard. What did it mean? Could I still walk? I thought, but I could feel my toes, so I thought, yes, I think I can still walk. Do I need surgery? How long do I have to stay here because I'm getting married in 2 weeks? We all sat there while I laid and they stood in the emergency room, and we cried for as long as we each needed to. It was really scary, and we were surrounded by darkness in that moment, but because we knew who was in charge of the situation, we stopped and we did what we knew would be the most helpful thing in that moment, and we stopped crying and we all started praying. We called to God, and we asked him to answer us and show us the unsearchable things that we did not know. And in his great wisdom, with grace and mercy, he started to do just that. It ended up that the type of break I endured was perfectly placed so I wouldn't need any type of surgery. Because when you hear the words, your back is broken, you assume the worst, the very worst. But what God had given me was literally the best case scenario for that situation. I had sustained a compound fracture toward the center of my spine, but my vertebrae did not move at all. So I only needed to wear a special made brace for the next 6 weeks, which kind of looked like Wonder Woman or Superwoman. It was kind of cool. and I would be just fine after that. But I know you're all wondering how I fit the brace under my wedding dress, because if you do that math, 2 weeks comes before 6 weeks. And I was actually able to make it to my last dress fitting with the brace on, and I had my dress fitted right over the brace. It kind of laced in the back, and so that ended up working out. You could barely see it. Because I did that, I was able to witness to the girls at the shop, who all wondered why I wasn't canceling the wedding and just waiting until I healed. I was able to explain to them that this day was not about how I looked necessarily, but who I was going to be standing next to. And I was very grateful that I was able to stand in that moment. So I was brought dramatically closer to my soon-to-be husband through that trial because he helped me every day get in and out of bed and do simple things around the house to get to my doctor's appointments, where I was told that I didn't have to wear my brace for one day out of those 6 weeks if I was very careful. And that day was my wedding day. You know, light and darkness were never meant to coexist. The darkness is always caused by our human sin nature or from the enemy. And the light is always God showing his mercy and grace and wisdom and power. And where the light shines, there's no darkness. So Kim is going to tell us more about the tools that we have to continuously confront the darkness.
The tools we're given as mom are many, yet hard to see sometimes. When we become moms, these little things, don't we sometimes wish we were given a toolbox to take home from the hospital that had more than diapers and butt cream? Or maybe an instruction manual, how to survive as a mom? Luckily, as we search for these things, we can find them readily available and all around us. We just have to utilize them. So we have 5 tools that we believe are essential to share with you tonight that we kind of brainstormed together, and we actually have examples here. So our first example, we have the lantern. It's the easiest and most obvious tool for most people to think of and pack when going camping. So how would that translate to a tool we have available as moms? God, in his great wisdom, knows that we can't see in the darkness. The light that he bears is the light we need to navigate our way through those shadows. Daniel 2:22, I don't know if we have a slide for that. I didn't do the slides. Daniel 2:22 says, he reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in the darkness, and light dwells within him. Knowing God is our light enables us to realize that even when we feel lost in the dark, imagine trying to find the bathroom in the woods without a flashlight or a lantern, he knows what our hearts are yearning for, and his light will lead us back towards himself. As we look for a guide to show us what we want to learn and which direction to head, we think of using our second tool, the compass. Tangibly as moms, this would be God's word. If you don't own a Bible, please see one of us or a mentor mom or a DGL, anybody afterwards, and we'll definitely get you one. It's an essential part to knowing how to find your way through the world as people, let alone as moms. God is our Father, yet he intimately knows our hearts as moms, and he's made sure that whatever fear or hope we're experiencing, we can find a similar story in Scripture. For example, have you ever been in the middle of a terrible situation where you felt you were completely inadequate as a mother because you let something happen to your child that you swore you were never going to do, or you didn't live up to the unreasonable expectations that you or somebody else put on for yourself? Well, in the Bible, in Luke 2:43, specifically, a young mother thought she knew exactly where her child was, in good hands, and went about her way until she realized, with that same lump in her stomach that I'm sure you've all felt, that she was mistaken and her child was actually missing. This mother was Mary, and the child was Jesus. How did she lose Jesus? We can point fingers, write viral Facebook posts as to why we think she's the worst mother ever. But the point here is that the Bible was written as a tool for us, and specifically for us mothers, to know that we're not alone. And we haven't been for quite some time. Along with our compass, we're given another tool to help show us that we're not alone. When we feel lost or as if we've fallen into a hole and can't be reached, we just need to look for tool number three, a rope to hang on to. When a friend or mentor throws us a rope, we need to be mindful and grab on and use it to climb out of wherever we've found ourselves. These people who care about and love us, want to help us, and are putting themselves in a place that they hope we will recognize as an offer of support. If you feel as though you don't have close friends surrounding you, especially in this time of your life, when you can feel trapped inside of the four walls of your house or the electronic world of social media friends, look to the women in this room who have experienced being in your shoes and would love nothing more than to be your rope. Each table has a mentor mom, and they're here because they care about you. Sometimes you even find yourself with lots of friends and support, but you're still struggling to feel known. I actually was in that kind of a place where I felt like I was really struggling to be known by my friends and have a really close friend who I could talk to about anything. So I prayed a lot that God would send somebody into my life that I could relate to in many areas, but that could also relate to me and my desires, as well as somebody that could hold me spiritually accountable for things in my life. The only thing that I knew what to do or that I knew to do was to pray, and I did a lot. And though I didn't receive an answer right away, I was still feeling emotional about my situation. I continued to have hope that God was hearing me and that he would provide the right person at just the right time. Then through God's grace, I was contacted by a woman from the church who knew, and I knew God had sent, because through her words and invitation she placed before me in that moment, I saw that my prayers had been heard and that they were becoming answered. I didn't know how the rest of the process was going to play out, but I knew then that I was going to take the step in the right direction that I'd hoped for so long. I was paired with a spiritual mentor who ended up being exactly who I was looking for and who I was able to truly relate to. She understood my struggles, and she saw life in a similar way to me. I was able to be myself and to really let her know how I was feeling and what kind of support I needed, And she was willing to give that to me. I'm so thankful for that opportunity and for the friendship and mentorship that I've now been a part of, and I'll continue to grow that relationship for the unforeseeable future. I recognized that the rope was being thrown to me, and another tool that I grasped through that experience was tool number four, my sleeping bag. The sleeping bag represents the blanket of prayer that I and my husband, as well as everyone that I asked to pray for me, put on as I sought to find God's will in my life. The more prayer you have for any situation, the closer you are to understanding what God has planned for you. Prayer is a very important tool. And as our relationships grow closer to God through prayer, we're more easily able to see where He's working in our lives. Now, ultimately, the most important tool that we have as moms is tool number five, Jesus, our canteen. We all know that you won't last long in the wilderness without water. The same is true for the unknowns of motherhood without Jesus. As Jesus interacted with the Samaritan woman at the village well in John 4:10, he spoke, "If you knew the gift of God and who it was that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." This gift has been given freely. Jesus wants us to know him and accept his gift of salvation. If you've not received it for yourself, please speak to a member of our leadership and let them know that you'd like to know more about this gift and having a relationship with Jesus. So that kind of brings us to the end. We want to thank you for taking on the adventure of coming here tonight to hear what we had to say about becoming starry-eyed. We're so excited that you're choosing to come on this journey, and we can't wait to spend the year growing and learning together and finding out new and amazing things about one another. We know it can be difficult some nights to get here, but it's so worth it. Let's plan to use our tools this year and become starry-eyed.